Welcome to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, where conversations explore the inner frontier. What is it I can say I know and why? Who am I really? Is there such a thing as free will? How does the human mind differ from the programmed artificial intelligence being built today? How is thinking and destiny connected? Is mind really capable of being our best healer or our worst slayer? Where does the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax leave off and the mind begin? These are just some of the questions Eldon and his guest take on in this next fascinating hour. You won't want to miss any of it. And now, here's your host of Mind Matters, Eldon Taylor.
Welcome to another hour of Mind Matters, an hour devoted to questions of consciousness, mind, and all that might arise out of this inquiry and somehow, in some way, perhaps even really matter. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in Spokane, Washington, and through the marvel of modern technology, we are coming to you live in the Seattle area on your FM high-definition dial and across the Internet throughout the world. We have a wonderful guest today and a truly insightful and inspirational point of view. When you drink in the universe and all that it holds, have you ever wondered what your place in it really is? Like the proverbial grain of sand on the beach, we can seem to just be another speck that lasts but an instant in the grand scheme of time and space. But wait, you can also ask, can you really believe that we are but a passing flicker on the screen of Darwinian destruction? Passing whatever you really are on only in your genes and ceasing to exist otherwise? Well, if that's not who you are or who you think you are, and I for one do not believe that it is, then who ultimately are we? Are we strong individuals intent on something like Emerson proposes in his essay on self-reliance? Or are we something else, something more like one with a one? Can we have it both ways? Think, how would you live differently if you lived as the source of who you are? What if we are all one, truly one? What would that really mean? The proposition of non-duality suggests that we are just that. One, what is non-duality? Will you get ready to wrap your head around this? Because we're going to ask today not only what is non-duality, but how does it change how we see and behave in the world? Or does it? Is it analogous to the philosophy known as process theology, the belief that our cells are all, that we are like cells in our body, we are all in the body of the divine? Each week, we try to bring you qualified guests to add one more piece to the puzzle. That puzzle being, what does it mean to be human? What is mind, what is consciousness, and what really matters? Well, our guest today is here to tell us not just a part of the puzzle, but also the whole of it. Whole, as in W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E. As you find when you obtain his delightful book, and it is delightful, Looking for God, Seeing the Whole in One. There, drilled right through the middle of the book, is a hole about 1/2 inch in diameter. When I first saw this, I thought, how hokey. Well, hokey it is not. As you will quickly find out for yourself, today's guest is an expert on non-duality, and hopefully he will guide us into understanding exactly what this means, what the ramifications are, and why it can be so empowering. What do you think? Have you ever wondered if you were like a cell in the greater body or a drop of water in the infinite sea? We want your opinion, thoughts, and ideas today, so please join us. You can do that by phoning toll-free 877-230-3062 or by entering our chat room. Just go to www.ctrchat.com from anywhere in the world and enter your comments and questions. My partner, Ravinder, is here in the studio with me. Say hello to everyone out there, Ravinder.
Hello, everyone out there, Ravinder.
Same line every week. She monitors the chat room, watching it live during the broadcast. She will greet you and see that I don't get too involved with our guests, so your questions and comments will get on the air. Now my guest today is Chuck Hillick. He is a modern spiritual teacher, author, and licensed psychotherapist whose clarity of expression has earned him the admiration and praise of many notable writers and lecturers in this area. Chuck writes personally and directly about the essence of non-dual spirituality and presents its astonishing truths to the average reader in ways that are totally unique, completely accessible, and absolutely life-changing. Using his studies in both Eastern philosophy and Western psychology, Chuck's Enlightenment Quartet presents a worldview that shows his readers how to fully live a truly enlightened and authentic life in the 21st century by waking up to who they really are. That quartet consists of four wonderful books: Seeds of the Soul, The Way It Is, Enlightenment for Beginners, and the aforementioned Looking for God, Seeing the Whole in One. Chuck Hillick, welcome to Mind Matters.
Eldon, thank you so much. And for all of you listeners, this is the first time that Eldon and I have actually had a conversation in real time. So this is going to be a total pleasure to hang out with you for the next 55 minutes, Eldon. Thanks so much for inviting me aboard. I appreciate it.
It's indeed my pleasure. I love your books, and I have all four, and I purchased them.
Thank you.
Well, review copies. Just so everyone out there knows that, they were not review copies. The Whole, W-H-O-L-E, in capital letters, is one big bunch, if you will, to get your head around, especially in just 55 minutes. So why don't we start with what enlightenment means to you and how that relates to the whole, Chuck?
What does enlightenment mean to me, and how does it relate to the whole? This is a really loaded question, Eldon. Don't hold back. I'm glad that you're stocking me with some big ones here. Well, you know, the biggest secret about enlightenment is that you can't get there from here. You can only get here from here. But everybody wants to go out and looking for it and seeking it around, you know, the next corner or at the foot of some guru or in some special book that they've found or a workshop or a lecture. But as long as they're on their way to someplace else, as long as they believe that all they have to do is find the right formula, the right strategy, and then they're going to have this great awakening, in a sense, it's kind of like waiting for the Enlightenment bus. But the Enlightenment bus just will never, ever show up for them. It's just not, it just doesn't work that way, that there's something that you can do that will trigger this particular experience of oneness.
Okay. If we can't trigger the oneness, what is it that we are going to do in order to become enlightened?
Well, there's no becoming enlightened, and that's the real paradox. If you have this belief that says, I'm going to become enlightened, it has to first come from a place that says, well, right now I am not enlightened. And people justify that by looking at their own behaviors, their own ways of being in the world, and they say, in effect, an enlightened being wouldn't behave like I do. They wouldn't have the thoughts that I have and the feelings that I have and say the words that I say and do the actions that I say. They wouldn't say that, so they push that away. They say, no, that's not who I am. I have to do something, because who I am is not okay, and I have to struggle and go out into the world. But it's this very belief that you are not fully awake right now that actually creates the greatest barrier for you to really just be in the middle of this oneness. As long as you're pretending or believing that it's not right present now in your actual blissful nature in the quintessence of who you are, if you don't know that, then you're always going to say, well, it's out there someplace, and I have to go out and seek for this to show up in some kind of way. But it always puts you on the quest. And so my message to people is just call off the search, because you are who you are looking for. It's like a fingertip pointing at itself. The fingertip cannot point at itself. The eyeball cannot see itself. You are the very thing that you are seeking. And the moment that you move in a direction towards something that you think will awaken you is the same moment that it takes you off center. and you go on the quest, and then you're in the wonderful, wacky world of duality.
Okay, so to be enlightenment, as your book suggests in Enlightenment for Beginners, I stop seeking enlightenment. I turn instead and start trying to understand myself.
Well, it's not a self that has, it's not the historical ego self. People think that they are their bodies. You know, they have a body, but they're not really the body at all. But you can't really move towards God or towards consciousness, and you can't move away from God or from consciousness. You can't do that. All movement towards or away from that, it's all an illusion. Because you are that very thing. There's only one. But the only way that we can talk about this one is to, in a sense, pretend like we're separating ourselves from it and then turning around and looking back at it in order to discuss it. But maybe the best way to really have any kind of discussion at that is just to realize that you can't really talk about this at all. This goes far beyond words, and that was actually, Eldon, the reason why I wrote that book with a hole in it. I got really clear that words can only take me so far, that I would have to get to a place where I would go beyond words, where I would literally point to the void, the emptiness, and encourage people to realize that the rest of it is just kind of, we can march up to the portal, we can march up to the gateway, but beyond that, words won't take us there, because words constrict, words draw like a little boundary around and say, this is what this word means, and it doesn't mean all of that stuff. Well, as soon as you do that, you're back in duality, this and not this.
Okay. Now, you use words in a wonderful way. In fact, you quote one of my favorite authors, Alan Watts, and the other one, R.D. Lang, who wrote the book Knots. And I don't know
yes.
if you're familiar with that.
Oh, sure. Chapter. Oh, sure.
Okay. So let's just go to some of this, all right?
All right.
You say in your books, I mean, you use these one-liners very powerfully, and I love it. And some are very provocative. I want the audience to understand that these are delightful books. But you say, why don't I simply pretend that I'm not pretending? What do you mean by that?
Well, for the audience, Heldon is referring to this particular book that I wrote. In fact, it was the first book that I had come up with, and it was called Enlightenment for Beginners. I think I had it triggered in me from my own guru, who I never actually met, but his name was Sri Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi. And Maharshi used to contend that it's all a great game of pretending. So I started to go with that theme, thinking, hey, you know, if I'm pretending, maybe I'm pretending to not pretend. And then this is how the game is played. This is how it initially starts. When I pretend that I'm not pretending, and then I forget that I'm not pretending, and then I get caught in all of the, the machinations and the dramas and the melodramas and the chaos that shows up all around us every day in our waking world. This is what we play in. This is the stuff that we bloody our nose in. This is the stuff that we've come, or that you have come, really to participate in and to enjoy and to revel in, you know, to revel in the craziness and to revel in the chaos, as well as to revel in the beauty and the joy and the love and the forgiveness. But you want the whole spectrum. It's not like this is good and this is bad. Granted, this is comfortable and this is not so comfortable, but it's neither good nor bad. It just is what it is.
All right. So we're all pretending that there is good and there is bad in the world, unless we're more awake, and then we would realize that we are pretending. Have I got that part so far?
Well, yes and no. If to really get down to it is that there's no we at all. This we stuff just has to be thrown out. It's just you.
Okay.
Yeah, the center of the universe lies within the center of your very own heart. And, you know, somebody, I remember talking, a couple of months ago about, somebody was saying about imaginary playmates, and I said, we all have imaginary playmates. They're called everyone else. They're called other people. All of these creatures, all of these people, all of the the friends and the spouses and the children and the parents that we have, all of these have arisen within your consciousness. And yes, dear listener out there, I'm talking about your consciousness. All of those rise from within you, and you have peopled the stage of your life with people who are there for a very specific reason. And what are they there for? Well, certainly they're there to play in your play, but they're also there to provide for you an experience that you've drawn to yourself as a way to awaken yourself up.
All right. In my dream of dreams, I'm playing with my playmate, Chuck Hillig. And we'll be back in just a few moments after these brief commercial messages to indulge with our imaginary playmates some
more. Yes, good.
you're listening to Contact Talk Radio, Mind Matters. I'm Eldon Taylor. My special guest today is Chuck Hillig, and we'll be right back.
By special arrangement, Eldon has made available his best-selling Essential Pillars of Success at unheard-of savings. The principles in Essential Pillars have worked for thousands of people around the world and are guaranteed to work for you. Essential Pillars of Success consists of 9 programs on 8 CDs and comes with a book that explains how and why it's so easy to self-sabotage our best efforts and provides a roadmap for correcting those thought patterns and beliefs. It also includes a booklet teaching the learning strategies involved in choosing the programs or scripts that run through your mind. The entire mind conditioning set normally sells for $243.50, but is yours today for only $88. Plus, you will receive hundreds of dollars in bonus tools to further assist you. Call 1-800-964-3551 today for details.
You've heard of subliminal messages as used to sell you goods, ideas, even politicians. But did you know there is a patented and scientifically demonstrated effective CD series known as InnerTalk? InnerTalk can motivate and teach your subconscious in ways that can release stress, restore confidence, and build a new you. Millions of users worldwide have turned to InnerTalk as the antidote for all the negative messaging that most of us get every day. Think about it. Play your CD in the background while you do other things, and all the while your subconscious mind is being trained. Maybe you want to lose weight, or maybe you have difficulty in your relationships, or maybe you think of the maybe and ask yourself, what could I do if I believe that I could do anything and not fail? Go to their website and get their free catalog today at innertalk.com or call toll-free 1-800-964-3551. Remember, InnerTalk, when believing in yourself matters.
Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor is brought to you in part by the Mind Mint, the self-improvement superstore. MindMint.com offers hundreds of books, audio and video programs, subliminal and hypnosis technologies, software, biofeedback, and much more, all designed with your success in mind. Proven programs to help in almost all situations and walks of life, from the practical to the spiritual. Go to www.mindmint.com, your complete one-stop self-improvement superstore. Once again, that's www.mindmint.com.
Welcome back. Before the break, I was talking to my special guest today, Chuck Hillig, about imaginary playmates. Now, that's a serious conversation. We're not making this up as we go along. Chuck is basically telling us that there is no we, that there's only, I guess, me. He said you, so I guess that's me, but I must be his imaginary playmate. So I just have to come back and say, all right, now, we have lots of imaginary playmates. And during the break, I said to my other imaginary playmate, Ravinder, here in the studio with me, what do you think? And she said, I love it. He speaks such powerful one-liners. I'm going to have to read his book. I'm sitting here with all four of them. Ravinder, what else did you add?
Just, I mean, every statement he seems to say seems to be a total feast for the mind. I mean, I confess I haven't read the books yet, and I have to go out and do so. In fact, I'm fingering through them right this moment, Jack.
Well, thank you. That's an enthusiastic testimonial. I appreciate that. So nice.
So you can tell that I'm the only one confused. Everybody else has figured this out already, Chuck. So if I'm an imaginary, I mean, if everything else is imaginary, am I inventing things like Al-Qaeda? Am I inventing things like the economic woes that are on my invented television set that I see in my invented time?
Well, I don't know if I'd say invented, but I think that, you know, part of what I'm pointing at is that you are the source of all of the entire cosmos. You are that source. The great discovery, Eldon, is not that you are God, but that all that there is God. You know,
okay.
People have to give up, you know, looking for the one, because everyone is the one. You know, all these, it seems like we're having a dialogue. You're there, I'm 3,000 miles away in Virginia, and it seems like we're having a dialogue. And all the people that we could have, you know, who may or may not be willing to phone in, we could be having a dialogue. But it's not a dialogue. It's just a monologue. But it's coming out of different mouths. There's just one.
Okay, is that what you mean when you say you speak of sitting around being everything everywhere and nothing nowhere?
Yeah. For our listeners, that's, again, talking about the Enlightenment for Beginners book. It's a way of saying that, yes, you're everything everywhere and you're nothing nowhere, but that both of those seem to have some real major drawbacks. So the only way to really have, for lack of a better term, fun with all of this is to pretend, underline in red 10,000 times, pretend that you are something somewhere. In your willingness to pretend like you're something somewhere, then you can pretend there's other beings out there that are someplace and somewhere too. And then you can begin the great dance. Who are you dancing with? Well, you're dancing with yourself.
All right, now we've just gone in a circle.
No, he's just told you the answer to everything. I mean, the purpose of existing is to dance with ourselves.
Yes, in the end...
That's it. That is the magic answer.
In the end, it's all just love, loving itself. But we have this idea that, it doesn't look like, you know, war doesn't look like love. Well... We have this idea, it has to look like this. It has to be all kissy face and moon, June, croon, spoon, and soft and warm and wonderful. No, the whole thing is love. The whole, every moment, every nanosecond of our lives, we're swimming in love. We are the love. We are that. That's all that there is. But we overlay something saying, no, this is wrong. You know, it shouldn't work out this way. Listen, things always work out. As soon as you give up your idea about what working out is supposed to look like, it always works out. This is how it's working out. Can we align ourselves with this? Can we say yes to this? Can we say that yes is our default position? And say yes to it all, but not a yes, but an enthusiastic, you know, capital Y-E-S, yes. Then you're reveling in it. Then you're becoming an appreciative audience to your own melodrama.
Okay, so if I have an acquaintance that's has a deceased member of their family from the towers at 9/11, I'm to tell them that they need to revel in that, Chuck?
Oh, no. No, you need to weep and wail and gnash your teeth if that's what's appropriate for you, and if that's what's appropriate for them, too. I never tell people not to feel what they're feeling. You know, the feelings that show up are not the problem. The problem becomes when we say no to the feelings that show up. Being angry is not is not the problem. Being angry about being angry, that's the problem. But all of the emotions that humans create inside their heart of hearts, all of those, that's all part of the great dance. I never say that people should not be feeling what they're feeling, but to recognize that they are the source of these feelings, that nobody and nothing out there is making them feel something. I encourage people to recognize that they are responsible for 100% of everything that they think, feel, say, and do. Not 99.9%. 100% as an adult, they're responsible for sourcing it all. They source all of that, and they're responsible for it, and they need to let everybody else off the hook. Because if I kick back and go, oh, I got drunk because my wife made me angry, you know, then I'm taking myself off the responsibility hook for my own behavior, and I'm putting her on it. I'm saying she is the one who has her hands on the steering wheel of my life. I'm just along for the ride. But you hear the victimization in this. I hear so much of it, and I heard so much of it when I was a practicing psychotherapist in California. People were always wanting to blame somebody else for being responsible for their lives. You know, I'm the way that I am because my parents beat me up. No, your parents beat you up, and you're choosing to be this way right now. If you make a false linkage, a false sense of causality between them, then you're off the responsibility hook for changing and for redirecting the rest of your life. I used to hear this all the time. It was quite common.
Now, I totally concur with what you just said. Indeed, I've written two books that are about nothing but that. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to bring you right back. Two things.
All right.
I'm responsible for myself. I totally get that.
Right.
But does that mean if I'm, you know, walking down the street and I see a crime about to be committed, that I shouldn't be involved?
No.
That I shouldn't attempt to stop it?
Oh, you should. No, not at all. If you feel a fire in your belly to do something about it, you need to take action, but to let go of your idea about what the outcome should be. If you feel like you need to get in there and save this person from being robbed or hurt, then you need to throw yourself into it. But it may work, it may not work. But either way, respond appropriately to that. But never hold back. I always encourage people to participate. You know,
okay, as a nation, how should we respond then to threats of the nature Al Qaeda poses?
Well, where is Al Qaeda?
Well, the last time we saw him on our soil, it wasn't very pleasant.
Right, but who is the source of Al Qaeda? Who is the source of Osama bin Laden? Who is the source of Sri Bhagavan Raman Maharshi or Alan Watts?
I understand you. I'm the source.
You are the source. You are the source of the teachers. You are the source of the teachings. You are the creator of all of that. And if you feel moved and compelled, if you have a fire in the belly to take action in some regard, like to stop the genocide in Darfur, or, you know, to save the whales, or to elect a particular candidate, you need to throw yourself into it 100%. And get totally involved in this. Dance the dance. Don't sit it out. You know, all of this stuff is here for your edification.
But as soon as you get involved, you have re-entered duality.
Yes and no. You've re-entered it, and you become attached to it only if you become attached to a particular outcome as a result of your efforts. If you're attached to a particular outcome, then you've gotten stuck in the drama, as opposed to someone who's just throwing themselves into it, and, you know, all outcomes are certainly acceptable. All of them. They all have to be acceptable, because if you say only these outcomes are the ones that I'm willing to accept, well, then you're caught in this drama.
So if what you're attempting to do then, and I'm just playing devil's advocate,
that's okay.
Where you're going, okay. If what you're attempting to do is protect a loved one, and you're attached to protecting that loved one,
okay.
Then you've thrown yourself into duality, because you're no longer unattached to the outcome.
Well, you can throw yourself into it and be attached and be unattached, but it's not something that you consciously decide. If you see your wife or a loved one being hurt, are you going to debate that at that moment, or are you just going to act?
well, of course you're going to act.
Yeah, so you're not going to think about, am I being dualistic, am I being non-dualistic? No, you're just going to act, and probably it's going to be appropriate.
I don't think about that all day long anyway, do you?
No, I don't. Sometimes I surprise myself as to what shows up, and I don't know what I'm going to say, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and just going, wow, where'd that come from? Well, that's interesting. So I'm struck by all of this as much. But, you know, it's part of living in the mystery of this.
Living I love in the mystery. I do. I said there were two things I was going to bring you back to. It's just, you said we're responsible for everything. I totally concur. As I say, I've said that time and again. Our listening audience knows how much I concur. Still, on page 153 of Seeds for the Soul, wonderful book, you say you're still responsible for your choices even though you have no real control over making them. Please explain that for me, will you?
Well, do you think you have control? See, I don't think we have control. I think we're 100% responsible, but I think we have zero control. I can hear people who are in the audience going, oh, my God, I can see them rolling their eyes. But it's true. I mean, I say that it's true, but listen out there. I do not want people to believe one word that I say. Please do not believe me. I don't want you to trade in your beliefs for what you think are my beliefs. This is not about belief. But if there's if choices are to be made, then there's got to be a chooser. But if there's no chooser making a choice, which is duality, if there's just one, then who is choosing? And what are they choosing? If everything is quintessentially one, who is choosing it and what are they choosing? It's only one. It's an illusion that there's some kind of choice. Now, you know, the old chestnut about do we have free will? Well, from my point of view, we do not have free will, but it's extremely important for us to act as if we did have free will.
So when you say that, you're not really saying everything is predetermined.
Well,
or are you?
Maybe I am. In fact, if that were true, then you didn't. Your being concerned about that has been predetermined too.
And so has this conversation, and therefore you know that my predetermined next question goes like this. If, and this is straight out of your work, the way
it is,
if I'm really this so-called it, the one, this total, or just me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then why don't I have a direct and personal experience of being it right now? Why is it I have this illusion that there's you and me and everybody else?
Well, you can't be there at your own awakening. You know, everybody wants that. You can't begin to imagine how many times I've had this kind of conversation. Why don't I have that experience? How come I can't have that experience? Well, wait a minute. If you're having that experience, that's dualist. Then you say, I have this experience. But if there's only one, then who is there that's having this experience? You've thrown out the oneness, and now you're back to you and this experience. It's like the subject and the object, two things. The best analogy that I like to use is the analogy of the movie screen. Now, in the movie screen, it's seamless, and it's white, and it's unbroken, and the movie is projected upon it, and you get attached to a particular character in this movie that's being projected, and you start to think that that's who you are. And so whatever happens to that character on the screen in that movie, whether it's a tragedy or a comedy or a farce or a melodrama, seemingly happens to you. But wait a minute, you're not that character at all. Who you really are is this unbroken, seamless screen that all of this stuff is being projected on. You are that. You are not the small character, but people like to argue for their own limitations and say, no, I want to go from being an infinite being just down to this 180-pound person who's struggling through this and worrying on the job and having problems in his relationship. Sounds like fun. It is fun if you know that it's just part of a dance.
All right, Chuck Hillick, we're going to have to take another break here. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you about this. I mean, if this is who we all are, I mean, I am all these things, then there's absolutely nothing bad out there in the world. I mean, you know, anything that gives me pleasure ought to be just within the scope of act it out, have fun, do it all. Now I'm going to hold that in suspense. You're listening to Contact Talk Radio, the show's Mind Matters. My special guest today is Chuck Hillick. You're going to want to know a whole lot more about him. I advise you, you know, run to his website. It's www.chuckhillig.com. We'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Taken over your life? Waking up tired? Unable to focus? At last, a new approach for the treatment of stress-related disorders. It's called CES, a revolutionary new technology that is safe, effective, and easy to use. Best of all, it has none of the negative side effects of drugs. CES has been validated by a major study at the Harvard School of Public Health. Its benefits demonstrated in dozens of independent research studies conducted at the National Institute of Health. And this new technology is now available in CES Ultra, the most effective and cost-effective unit now on the market. So why endure another stress-filled day? Increase your mental energy. Elevate your mood. CES Ultra can make the difference. It is available on a 30-day, no-questions-asked, money-back guarantee. Call 866-YES for CES or go to CESUltra.com to find out more about this breakthrough technology. CES Ultra, the doorway to good health and a balanced life.
Hay House, the publisher that has revolutionized the industry, brings you Choices and Illusions, the riveting New York Times bestseller by Eldon Taylor. How did I get where I am and how do I get where I want to be? Questions we all ask ourselves. Choices and Illusions brings you the answers. Learn how choices are made for you without your knowledge, how you are programmed to sabotage your own goals, and why success so often eludes you. Learn to rewrite the most powerful influence in your life, your subconscious mind. John Edward, host of the Crossing Over Show, says, "Read this book. We are living at a time when people are searching for answers in their lives. This book can be, if applied, a roadmap to personal enlightenment and empowerment. I believe it can tune in the frequency you are currently operating on. More importantly, it helps you to see that you can manifest a change. Get your copy today. Buy it online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or get it at your local bookstore."
Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor is brought to you in part by InnerTalk, the patent and proven audio technology that makes change easy from the inside out. When you're ready for change, you want InnerTalk. You can succeed and you can begin today. Lose weight. Stop smoking. Enhance relationships. Be a better parent. Increase memory. End procrastination. Realize your goals and so much more. Hundreds of titles to choose from. Inner Talk, when believing in yourself matters. Check it out today at www.innertalk.com or phone for a free catalog at 1-800-964-3551. Again, for more information and that free catalog, call them at 1-800-964-3551.
Thanks for joining us today. We're having some real fun. We do have indeed a special guest. If you're just joining us, I'm Eldon Taylor, and we're talking to Chuck Hillick. And Chuck Hillick, I guess the best way to know him is he's a spiritual teacher, all right. He's a psychotherapist, all right. But this is the champion, if you will, of all those that I know or that I have read in my lifetime, of this idea of non-dualism. He walks the talk, he thinks the talk, and we've been having some real fun. Well, just before we went to break, we were talking about all is good. Everything is perfect. It's just as it is. You could make it more comfortable, but you couldn't make it more perfect. And during the break, I discussed this a little bit with Chuck and said, we'll just pick it up from there when we get back. What do you mean everything is perfect? You look into the world, you see crime, you see despotism, you see villains and victims. What do you mean it's all perfect, Chuck?
Well, you know, if you think about movies or books or plays, the authors love their villains every bit as much as they love their heroes. The villains give the heroes a way to become heroic. The villains need to be there in order to move the conflict along, to move the drama along. If you're reading a book or watching a movie or a play and there's no conflict, you're going to get bored. You're going to, you know, walk away from the movie or the book and you're going to say, no, this is too boring. You want the conflict. We like the conflict. But I guarantee you the author doesn't hate the villains, but he recognizes that their juice, their mojo, is something that needs for the melodrama to play out. So it's not wrong, it's not bad, it's something that is very useful. We need our villains. We need our Osama bin Ladens. We need our Ahmadinejads. We need Kil Jamil. We need these people because they create all of this mischief in the world. They have a high level of rascality about it. Wow, they're so exciting. What are they going to do next? Isn't this thrilling? This is very seductive. It pulls us into it. It pulls us into the drama of this, and we love it. We love the drama.
But you're saying that we need them, but them, you already said that's me.
That is you. Of course it is. You creating all of these in order to, again, play in your play. You need to have these villains. You need to have these rascals. You need to have these people who stir things up. But it doesn't have to be on the other side of the world. Look in your own life. Who are the people in your life that, just by their being the way that they are, they stir things up? They muddy the waters. They're always, you know, up to something, and you're never quite sure what they're up to, and you're a little bit, you know, concerned about them, and what are they going to do? And we all have people like that show up in our lives. We like that. They're the spice of life. They're not bland people.
So we can change it. But if we change it, we haven't really changed it, you say. We only make it more comfortable.
We can change it, and it'll become more comfortable, but that doesn't mean it's getting any, you know, it's getting better, like it's good and bad and worse. No, I don't believe that much in good and bad. I think good and bad is a moralistic judgment. I think things are comfortable or uncomfortable. And if you see something that you, in your world view, says, oh, this is bad, this is wrong, I have to change that, well, again, I encourage you to go out and throw yourself into the mix. Put yourself into the ring and do whatever you can to bring about some kind of change, if that's what floats your boat. I'm not saying not to take action in the world. Take action in the world, but do not be attached to the results and the outcomes of the results of the actions that you've taken. It may work out this way, it may work out that way, but trust in consciousness that whatever way it works out is exactly what needs to have happen at that moment. Who knows why? That's part of the mystery.
So what you're saying is there is no such thing as an absolute morality.
I don't sense that at all. I think things are the way that they are. And part of expressing the love that you are is to do so with compassion, with openness, with authenticity. Yeah, if you live that way with compassion and authenticity, you're going to have a pretty wonderful life.
So if there's no absolute morality and there's no right and wrong, and it's all basically an illusion, all these other imaginary playmates, and I really do adopt that view, assuming that I could, because there are philosophers right away that would say something like, that's an interesting perspective to take. How do you take that, say, at the moment your appendix ruptures? Let me ask you that one before I go on. How do you take that?
Well, if my appendix suddenly ruptured, I would make the appropriate 911 call. wouldn't that be appropriate? But remember, Eldon, your body has a destiny, but who you really are does not have a destiny.
So, the illusion of pain, I would just dismiss as any other illusion?
Oh, no, the pain is as real as your body is. I'm quite sure that Christ was in pain, you know, during the crucifixion. But I'm sure he was having a very different experience than someone who was crucified next to him.
Okay, so now maybe we're getting here. I just see this glimmer of duality coming on your forehead, and it doesn't become you.
Oh,
there
no.
There is my body, and there is me. And it's the course for my body is not the course. How is that not dualistic?
Well, you know, in order to even talk about this, you're going to have to use dualistic words. But bottom line, you're always looking directly into the multifaceted face of God. But the discovery is that it's always been your own face. Wherever you look, you're seeing your own face. And you'll see your own face as soon as you give up your idea about what your face looks like. Your face looks like what is.
All right, so I go back to this world. I have really got a tilted look on it. Say, again, I'm still being devil's advocate. All right?
That's okay.
I'm playing for those chicken-hearted ones out there that are not phoning us right now, okay? All of you listeners, get in here. All right? I have learned all these things about karma and dharma and past lives and reincarnation and right and wrong and morality and, you know, I've read the Beatitudes, and and you've already, you know, given us an insight to yourself, a little self-disclosure when you talked about Christ's pain on the cross. So, with all of that said, it's all untrue. There is no such thing as karma. There is no such thing as morale. There is no such thing in the big grand scheme of it all.
Well, karma exists as long as you have this sense of separation. If you have a sense of separation, then the thoughts and the feelings and the words and the actions that you do will create, quote unquote, good or bad karma. And then you are obliged to come back, quote unquote, to have the effects of this good or bad karma. But suppose there is no separation. Suppose there's just one. Suppose everything is quintessentially only one. Well, then who is having this karma that they have to work out before they die? Whoever dies to begin with, or for that matter, who is ever born to begin with? See, if we think that we are attached to the body, then we have a date that we had in mind. Oh, this is when I was born, and this is where I was raised as a child, and this is where I had my first date, and this is where I got married, and then I got my job, and now I'm an old fart. All of that, but that's just the story.
I love it.
This is the story. You know, the annihilation is not of yourself. The final annihilation is of your story. Somebody once said, what's the difference between duality and non-duality? So here's my distinction between duality and non-duality. Ready? Here it is. Double or nothing.
All right. And of course, what we want is nothing, isn't it? No well, thing.
No thing. But you know, that's the emptiness, the void. But it's not a void and this is the mystery. Within the void are all the forms. Within the forms is all the emptiness.
Yeah, a great friend of mine once said, I will give up everything for no thing. You know, I think the hardest thing for most people to wrap themselves around on this is, We do have all these stories, and we do have this long history of stories. And these stories aren't just about, say, our culture or our country, or you know, the Homo sapien for that matter. They include things like you know, the afterlife and the spirits and the angels and all of this in a very real sense. In order for us to be non-dualist, we accept is a story, is doesn't exist, is a, for all intent and purposes, I love your metaphor, imaginary playmate.
Yes. Well, the stories exist, but they're not real. The past, the present moment does not have a past that it's living out of, and it doesn't have a future that it's living into. This precious moment is all that there is. This is truly it. This is it. This moment. This is the only moment where you have any kind of sense of, you know, self. In the moment that the ego goes to the past and thinking about guilt and resentment and anger and regret, or into the future when it starts to tell itself scary stories or imaginary things coming up around the corner, this is the stuff that the ego loves. They love because it's filled with the richness of the stories of what did happen or what could or might happen. It doesn't. The ego doesn't like to hang around this precious moment of now very much because it has no power in it. It has no power in it. It needs to have the stories to energize it, to breathe life into that drama.
You know, Chuck Hillig, I could visit with you for another hour at least, many more hours. We're going to have you back. We're getting short on time. We've got about 3 minutes left. I want to let our listening audience remember that your books are The Way It Is, Realizing the Truth About Everything, Looking for God, Seeing the Whole in One, Seeds for the Soul. I'm actually picking them up as I go here, and Enlightenment for the Beginner, for Beginners. Four wonderful books, astonishing insight, mind-boggling at times, very definitely full of those one-liners that you will cogitate on with great zest, I promise you. You will love them all. Chuck, tell our listening audience how they can get a hold of you, where they can find your books, and so forth.
Thank you, Eldon. Well, I'm very accessible, actually. You can just email me at Chuck Hillig, C-H-U-C-K-H-I-L-L-I-G, at yahoo.com. Chuck Hillig at yahoo.com. I live about 60 miles southwest of Washington, D.C., a little town called Locust Grove. I'm out here in the woods. There's a toll-free number that you can use to order my books from my publisher, and that's Sentient Publications in Boulder, Colorado. Sentient, like sentient bean. Sentient Publications in Boulder, and their toll-free number is 866-588-9846. 866-588-9846, and you can order all of my books there. And if you feel the mood or the, you know, the desire to email me, you know, if I'm available, I'd be certainly happy to have an email conversation with anyone.
And do. I mean, all of you out there, you email him following this show. Ask him all the questions that I didn't think of, that I wasn't right there in order to get. Ravinder, have you got anything you want to say to Mr. Hillig before we let him go today?
I think the guy's a genius. I mean, I get what he's saying, I think. I mean, I could talk for a couple of hours just based on what he's been talking about. I mean, I see everything as being like a three-dimensional television. And you can, I mean, people enjoy some pretty strange movies out there. Well, isn't that what everything is about anyway? You're enjoying it. Pain isn't necessarily bad, because if you watch a film, you cry at the sad bits, you laugh at the happy bits. It's all part of the game. I think it's brilliant.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I'm looking forward to going through your books, most definitely.
Well, I'll come back and have another conversation with Eldon anytime you want to invite me.
And I'll guarantee you, she does not pass out compliments lightly, Chuck.
Oh, all right.
It has been wonderful to have you as my guest. We want to thank everybody for listening in today. We hope to see you again next week when my guest will be Dr. John L. Turner. And we'll be talking about his book, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations. But most importantly, I've come to know John, and I'm going to tell you what, he's involved in doing some really interesting research and some other things having to do with life after death. It'd be interesting to have you, Chuck, join us one of these times. That could be a great conversation.
Sure.
I'm Eldon Taylor. This is Mind Matters. We appreciate you being with us. Have an absolutely wonderful week. Same time next week. We hope to see you again.
Thank you for listening to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, the one show where your mind is the ultimate frontier. Remember to join him again for more riveting guests and thought-provoking discussions every Tuesday at 4 o'clock Pacific Time right here on ContactTalkRadio.com.